Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
That's what they said at 20,000.
Yeah, and look, it went to, you know, $4,000.
It's a good thing the show started without it. Yes.
Sorry. Oh, my goodness.
We'll get back to this topic in a few more minutes. Yeah. In the meantime, I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where none of us is as smart as all of us. Especially
I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday.
You were genuinely shocked.
So how did
shocked.
The thought process go? I didn't think. Look, I was wrapped up in Dogecoin and Bitcoin, which have been in the news of late, which is an awkward pivot to the news of the day. And Molly and I were talking before they actually turned the music on and surprised us, as they do with the beginning of this podcast pretty much every time. And Molly said, look, we have to give a nod to the news of the day. And we do, because if you have been watching even a part of the impeachment proceedings in the Senate, it has been, for me anyway, visceral. It's been stunning and shocking. It's been horrible. And I can't imagine what it's like for members of Congress and their staffs to have to relive that stuff. It's just amazing.
I mean, it is horrific. Like, it's absolutely horrific and gut-wrenching, and we just want to acknowledge that, I guess, because it's it's a form of trauma that we all lived through and are living through all over again, and now in ways that we didn't even realize. And so
we wanted to say that.
We see you. It's been a tough day on the internet. I will say it has been punctuated by occasionally laugh out loud, hilarious tweets about drunk Tom Brady. And so, as always,
I saw a fleeting video go by. Was that Tom Brady after he had a couple?
Oh, dude, it has been the most hilarious day in Tom Brady land.
He doesn't eat sugar, he doesn't eat nightshade, but he's going to have a couple of tequilas or whatever.
It was an emotional, as with all days in America lately, a lot of emotional whiplash happening on Twitter, like from the utterly gut-wrenching, horrific, you know, depth of the attack and the true danger that we didn't even realize on the Capitol to drunk Tom Brady. It's like weird America in a nutshell.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to make a turn from that to all y'all and your questions.
Let you do the work now.
Our task today is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? As nice as it is to hear about drunk Tom Brady, man, that's amazing. So we will pick up where we left off yesterday, right? Is that what we're going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yep. On the minimum wage, we got, as you might imagine, a lot of questions about that. Let's hear our first voice memo.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Dawn in Henniker, New Hampshire, and I have a question about the minimum wage conversation. Why are we just talking about making it $15 an hour and not talking about things like indexing it to inflation so that we don't go another decade without it increasing at all? Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, 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 for sure.
That's like the one question we failed to ask.
Yeah. We had Aaron Dubé on from UMass Amherst, and we neglected. I neglected because it was right on the tip of my tongue, and then we were like, all right, well, let's go. Anyway, so look, yes, ought to be indexed. Mm-hmm. I will offer an extremely cynical opinion as to why Congress has declined to index it so far. I think the reason they don't index it, in a lot of ways, the same reason they don't do things like get rid of the debt limit or stuff like that, or add automatic stabilizers onto their relief bills, is because Congress doesn't want to give up the power. And if they index things automatically, or if they get rid of the debt limit, or if they add automatic stabilizers to economic relief plans, which would increase the relief as the economy gets worse, that means they don't get a vote anymore. It just happens when it needs to happen. And I don't think Congress is willing to do that.
It's like a way to hold us hostage every couple of years. You know what I also wonder, actually? Yeah. For some reason, this is pinging the pattern recognition part of my brain related to tax filing, because we could also, much like we could index the minimum wage to inflation, we could just send everybody a tax bill and not have this big tax filing industry that we talk about every year. But I wonder if those things are related. I wonder if it's less about Congress wanting the power and more about businesses saying, no, thank you. We would like the power.
Oh, well, yeah.
To be able to sort of all of a sudden say, like, you know, we've been paying people too much all this time, and our share price goes down every time we talk about, you know, giving people a raise. So we want to be able to just, like, dial it back.
Yeah. There are a lot of forces at work in what happens in this economy, for sure. One of the other questions we got, actually, was about the Congressional Budget Office report, which we talked about on the $15 minimum wage proposal. And some of you had asked after I said that one of the things it would do, raising the minimum wage to 15 bucks, would be to cost 1.4 million jobs in this economy. Some of you asked whether it's jobs or workers. It actually is about workers. It's something less than a full percent of workers. CBO says, and this is the quote, young, less educated people would account for a disproportionate share of those reductions in employment. Because that's the way it always goes. Young and uneducated people always get the short end of the stick.
Yep. Or not. If Aaron Dubé is to be believed and that report is overly pessimistic, they might not, but yeah. Our next question goes back to the thing you may have heard us discussing at the top of the show before we knew the show was going to start.
Before it was actually the show.
Sometimes we're just talking here. It comes from Lance in Washington. It is about Bitcoin. He wrote, why are Tesla and MicroStrategies buying Bitcoin? Do they know something the rest of us don't?
Yeah, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there are all of these theories. It's funny because earlier our producer, Marissa, I'm just going to pull back the curtain, said, should I put this question in? Do you feel like you can answer it? And I was like, I'm probably just going to say bro deals, but we'll try.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, it's hard to imagine an explanation that is significantly more thoughtful than that. Like, one analyst is already calling the move a publicity stunt, specifically around Dogecoin, which is like a cryptocurrency that, you know, is kind of has a funny name or whatever. Sure, it could be diversification. One, the Big Short investor or a Big Short investor said it was to distract actually from the fact that Tesla is under some real regulatory pressure in China related to the safety of its vehicles. It's a pretty expensive distraction, but who knows? But it is really worth pointing out here that there are also conversations about whether Elon Musk has, again, gotten himself in trouble with the SEC, because we don't know when this purchase was made, but we do know that he's been tweeting a whole lot about how great Bitcoin is. Therefore, his investment in Bitcoin, Tesla's investment, has probably increased quite a bit since he's been tweeting about it.
So on Monday, so look, I think it's Elon Musk just screwing with us. But since they made that announcement or the filed the 10K, right, and said we bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin, it was like $39,000-$40,000 per Bitcoin. Now it's $45,000. They've done not bad for themselves, Tesla has. He's totally just screwing with us. I firmly believe that.
I don't think he's, 100%. I mean, he's screwing with whatever. It's just, you know,
whatever. This is not us, but
when you have a cult of personality CEO with very little oversight, like, I wouldn't try to, like, sometimes, much like Space Force, you know, there's, it's like, sometimes you don't have to come up with that complicated an answer. Like, he just thinks it's awesome, bro. And then he tweets about it and everybody buys it and he makes money. Magic.
Yeah. Shazam. Yep.
Bring on the emails. All right, we have another voice memo, something we have been talking a lot about. I think Jerome Powell was talking about it again today, low interest rates.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Blake from Seattle, Washington. I've been thinking a lot lately about low interest rates and in particular their relationship to asset prices. And I'm wondering if you think they have anything to do with rising wealth inequality. Thanks for your show, making us smart.
Yes.
Yes.
Next question. So look, the mechanics go like this. With interest rates at functionally zero, one of the only good places to get almost guaranteed returns is in equities, right? Asset prices. And as you can see, if you look at any stock market dashboard, the three major indices, actually four if you throw the Russell in there as well, are at or near record highs. Pardon me, that was my daughter playing with my dog out there. Anyway, so they are at or near record highs because people have to be in the market to make money. If you're a fixed income investor, right? If you're living off your CDs, if you're a Social Security person recipient, there's not a whole lot of upside for you in plowing it into, you know, a bank savings account. So you got to get out and you got to invest your money, and the place you do that is in equities. Now, Powell has clearly decided that he is willing to inflate asset prices as part of the cost of keeping money free and letting this economy grow aggressively, letting the economy run hot, because he believes, and he has said this continuously since 2018 when he got the job, the only way that the bottom part of the income spectrum gets any benefit from economic growth is if it goes on for a while, because those are the last people to get the raises and the better jobs. People at the upper income are doing fine, right? But people at the bottom are not going to do fine for a long time. And so he's willing to let the economy run hot. And that's why he's willing to put up with that income inequality for the short term.
I'm going to go ahead and translate this a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
Because I feel like what you're saying is trickle down. Like at the end of the day, no. a policy that basically says money is free, asset prices are going up, that will overwhelmingly benefit white, wealthier Americans who can buy houses cheap and then borrow money cheap to remodel those houses. Income, the minimum wage hike probably won't make it through the Senate in the meantime. Like rich people are going to get richer because money is free. And the hope from the Fed, as you've described it, is that that will trickle down. Well, and we now have lots of decades of evidence that says, no, it won't.
Okay. So trickle down is a very specific use case, which is not what is applicable here, right? Trickle down means we are going to cut taxes for the wealthy and for companies. And those gains will then trickle down through the rest of the economy. That is not what, and it doesn't work. It does not work. Laffer curve, that whole deal. That does not work.
But then why would this work? I'm just saying, even if this is not the specific legal definition, why would this work any better to boost the economy as a whole?
Because it does. Because in 2018 and 19 and late 17, that's when we saw low-wage workers get the benefits. That's when all the, let me put it in trickle-down terms, right? That's when all the riches had gone to the top and everybody else who was left over started getting some, right? Doesn't mean it doesn't suck, but that's the way it works. And look, and let's be honest, $15 and a minimum wage, as we were talking to Aaron Dubé the other day, ain't all that, right? Gets you to 2/3 of the median income in this country. I'm just telling you why Powell's doing what he's doing.
I know. I'm just interpreting.
Fair enough.
All right. Next.
Mike.
What do we got? Email?
In Washington. Here's what he says. Yeah. Hey, Kai and Molly, I don't want to speak too soon, but what are the next uses of mRNA as both a vaccine and a way to get cells to produce other proteins? Well, not being a biochemist, I'm going to pay for him.
But I learned a lot about it on Twitter recently, like everyone else, which is not true, actually. I mean, we did a whole episode about mRNA and this technology. We'll have a link in the show notes. Exactly. If you heard our prediction show, one of the things I said was, I think we are on the cusp of real medical breakthroughs, and a big part of it is because of this technology. They're turning their so mRNA, in case you missed that episode, is essentially a form of synthetic biology where they take, instead of, you know, injecting the body, in the case of vaccines, with like a bunch of dead vaccine, they inject the body with essentially some instructions that say, hey, other cells, make these proteins to fight this virus, this specific virus. That makes it quicker to produce because all you need to know is the genetic makeup of the vaccine in question. Hopefully easier to update because all you need to know is the genetic mutation of the vaccine in question. And also profoundly, potentially useful because it can be applied to cancer. It can be applied to other diseases that, you know, like malaria or flus or who knows what else. And so, and it has been somewhat overlooked. It had not produced a vaccine in the real world that was usable in the real world until COVID-19 and the novel coronavirus. And now that it's like funded proof of concept at a huge scale, I think there's so much to come.
I think it's asked this question in like November, December, when we first got news of the efficacy of some of these mRNA vaccines. Does not this fundamentally mean that in the fullness of time, we will be able to defeat all virus-borne diseases?
I mean, that's what people think, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And even cancer, which is not virus borne, right? You'd engineer. That's why, I'm a little, my secret nerdery right now is honing in on synthetic biology writ large and mRNA in particular, because if we can write instructions into the body to make it take care of disease, then yeah, that's the road we're on. It's pretty awesome.
You know what's interesting about this podcast and you and me doing it together? I've got like four things writ large that I'm interested in. Also, let's put that on our bingo cards. You're much more polyglot than I am. That's what I think.
Well, I'm a Gemini. I like to wander.
Oh, is that the way that works?
Through the world, an inch at a time.
Okay. Okay.
The generous interpretation is butterfly, but it's also like dilettante, whatever word you want to use.
All right.
But it's a good compliment. It works. It works.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was.
Let us know what you think. That's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We will be back tomorrow. State of our shells is as yet unknown. Keep sending your questions and your comments, though, to makemesmart@marketplace.org. Emails are good. Voice memos are better.
I would just like to say I'm pretty peppy for a Wednesday, and I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe because Wednesday shows are fun, actually.
I think we might have lost Kai at the exact moment. So Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Carrera. No, are you back? You're back. Okay, good.
Oh, my God.
Take it from here.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. The technical defects in this program are brought to you by Spectrum. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our smart speaker skills. God!
You have bad internet, bro. Today's program was engineered by Garrett Lang. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer, and the executive director of On Demand, who should really do something about this internet situation, is Sitara Nieves.
I have a demand. I have a freaking demand. God. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, you were blipping, but at least you were recording.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.